Blog Talk Radio.
You know, Monday mornings, sometimes I try to plan some really good music, and it just does not upload like you want it to. So I guess I just have to go with something else. This is sad.
Blow it out your ass.
Oops. Oops. It is going to be one of those days, too. I'm telling you. A freaking dress is stomping out.
Are you ready yet?
Wait, let me fix my hair.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes. I think I'm ready. Been locked up in the house way too long. It's time to get it. Because once again, he's out for the wrong.
That just don't feel right. Monday.
It is Monday.
Oh God, I'd be exhausted.
I know. But you know what's making it a little bit better? And it's totally not healthy. I made cake over the weekend. I made rainbow cake.
I am done.
Talking to you. See, that is the thing. I made white cake, and then I made four different layers and colored them four different colors. And then I made buttercream icing from scratch.
Stop, Ginger!
Yes, so guess what I'm eating right now? Oh, stop. It's so good.
Good morning to BB Cat. The second song is a much better intro. I know. That's why.
Yeah, very much so.
This is what woke me up at 3:30. Ironically, Sucker Punch is on the TV, and I heard the whole montage in my head that you have all the weapons you need. Now fight. And then I turned around and
I love that movie.
Get up.
Girl, I saw a walker. I don't know if you've seen these yet in Second Life, where people are wearing them, and as they walk, they're playing music.
Oh, I got to get one now.
Somebody make this one.
You know where they got that from, don't you?
No.
APB.
Oh, it was APB? Oh, yes, that's right. It's like a theme song.
A theme song, yeah.
That's right.
That was smart. Maybe we need to start going and pilfering stuff from other people's games to bring in a Second Life.
No kidding. Oh, I went and bought a pair of Zubishoo things, so I'm going to try to learn how to make Zubishoos.
If you would like for me to teach you, I will gladly show you, and I will make space for you to sell in the store.
Yes, I'm going to have to, but it's so good. I've used Photoshop. I was like, holy crap, this is not GIMP.
No, I had to take a Photoshop class 2 years ago just to get up to speed, because it is so drastically changed from...
Yes.
From version to version, which is good. That's not a complaint. Anyway, good morning to you people out there. It is lunch with Ginger and Corey on a Monday, in case you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually eating as we're talking, so.
We're both eating breakfast. And let me just tell you, people at the courthouse.
Breakfast.
People at the courthouse don't bathe in the morning. What is it with you people coming down and take care of tickets that feel you don't need to bathe when you're standing in small.
Ew!
Ooh, I was standing downwind of somebody was not fun. Okay.
No, that's not fun. That's not cute. Take a shower, people. Yeah, I'm so talking with a mouth.
Somebody else is eating too. At least on the East Coast, they are. They're probably eating lunch. So while Ginger is munching, I'm gonna jump in to let her finish her bite because we don't want her to talk.
Ooh, what's that? What you got?
Remember that little game that came out last year, Orcs Must Die?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Global Entertainment today has announced Orcs Must Die again.
Oh my God!
Well, no, that's not the title of it. I just gave it that, but it's Orcs Must Die 2, and it will be playable for those of you who are going over the PAX East. We'll get to. Get a glimpse of it. Again, it's sequel to AIS. Is it AI? AIAS, the strategy game of the year. It's supposed to put you and your friends back into the battle against a terrifying mob of orcs and other monsters. It's supposed to have a redesigned spellbook, so you'll have a broader range of options to build a deadly arsenal of defenses. Investing hard-earned skulls in an enormous new upgrade system will allow players to cater their favorite methods of burning, grinding, tossing, and dismembering orcs. Yay! So the new campaign will feature, you can play single player and now co-op with your friends. You can choose to play as the War Mage, a headstrong hero who charges into danger, or play as the more nuanced sorceress. Thanks, guys over there, because you know we were complaining. And a new hero who keeps enemies at bay with the control of the power of their might. Magic. I like that. I like that idea. It's supposed to give you a ton of new enemies. Vile new creatures are set to pour through the rifts as they brought all of your favorite trap fodder from the original Orcs Must Die along with them. You have some more defenses. A new enormous armory with new classic defenses, including all new assortment of magical trinkets. You can use your new spellbook to buy defenses and upgrades the way you choose to. Build up your arsenal based on how you play the game. It's also a brand new upgrade system. So they're saying it's been completely redesigned, so you can always earn skulls for replaying levels. Nice, right? Mm-hmm. And the skulls can be spent on multiple persistent upgrades for each of your defenses. Again, Orcs Must Die is an action strategy game. And it will be playable at PAX East. And if you really just cannot wait, you can go check out, I believe, a trailer is there at orcsmustdie.com. And probably on our site sometime today, because y'all know we're crazy over here at Gamer Girls Radio.
Yes. Yes, we are.
It'll be there. Oh, I need some coffee.
I have got tea.
Who was supposed to bring the coffee and a tea this morning? Whose job was that?
That was Ben's job.
I believe you're right.
Yes. All right. I got a fight. That's what we get.
Ooh.
A retired NFL player gets green light for lawsuit against EA. I am pulling this from GamePolitics.com this morning. The lawsuit filed against Electronic Arts by retired NFL players is moving forward. A California judge has rejected EA's motion to have the case dismissed. The suit, filed by several retired NFL players, wants it to turn into a class action so that some 6,000 defendants can be represented. The lawsuit alleges that EA, through its EA Sports brand, used their likenesses without consent in multiple Madden NFL games over the years. Electronic Arts argues that it is basically fair use and that real names were never used. EA also claims protection under the First Amendment as well as California law. Several of the EA's Madden feature historic teams that uses stats, attributes, and other factors for fantasy players that are close to the real life. Several EA's Madden games feature historic teams that use stats, attributes, and other factors for fantasy players that are close to the real life counterparts. The NFL players behind the lawsuit are Tony Davis from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Vince Ferragamo from the LA Rams, and Billy Joe Dupree from the Dallas Cowboys. They are seeking damages and all profits related to the use of their likenesses by EA. Yeah, we talked about this several months ago. They pretty much had to sign a contract, but if EA is saying this is fair use, I'm thinking EA's probably done something that wasn't covered by said contracts.
I don't think that that's fair at all if you're in college or in any type of sport and, you know, somebody has free reign to use your image. Now, granted, I do think some sports people get paid a bit much, but in college, there's a whole lot of risk and there's no payoff for them. So I can get hurt. I'm not getting paid. You're going to use my image. I'm not getting paid. I got bills to pay. I got to pay back this loan. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to do anything for me. You're not going to even say, you know what, we'll pay off your student loan in exchange for using your likeness. Something needs to be given in exchange. It's just not right. EA, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here is an interesting story that actually popped up. Rumors started circulating yesterday, and when I first heard it, I said, oh, no, I don't think so. But when I started seeing the pictures, I said, okay, it works. Now, I want you to take a moment to close your eyes, and I want you to picture Steve Jobs when he was a young man, one of the first of him holding an apple, you know, apple. And now I want you to picture Ashton Kutcher. And I'll be damned if they don't look exactly alike.
Wait, I didn't think about that.
The reason for me telling you this is there is a new indie film that's going to be coming out, according to Variety's Jeff Snyder, who says that Ashton Kutcher will be playing Steve Jobs in a new upcoming movie. Ha! Huh, right? Are you amazed? Because I am. I really didn't get it until I saw the pictures. They really do look a lot alike. The film is going to be directed by Swing Vote helmer Joshua Michael Stern. It's based on a script by Matt Whitley. And according to Snyder, the film will chronicle Steve Jobs' life from wayward hippie to the co-founder of Apple. Snyder has been tweeting over the weekend that he's been hearing the film will follow, well, actually that's not, Snyder is the one that wrote the article at Variety, sorry, is later tweeted that he's hearing the film will follow Jobs' story up until his return to after the 90s, but won't focus on his later years, and production is scheduled to begin as early as May. Sony is also preparing their own Jobs biopic based on Walter Erickson's best-selling biography, and it will not be an indie flick, unfortunately. But there's, like, pictures, if you go looking around the web, of Steve Jobs, like, in 1976, looks exactly like Ashton Kutcher. I would swear it was him if you didn't tell me. It's really weird.
That is.
So
yes, I saw that this morning, and I was thinking, there's no way they won't use him.
Well, Ashton Kutcher's not a bad actor. It's just, it's kind of like Keanu Reeves, where he got stuck with the whole Bill and Ted thing. And because of that, people think that's pretty much his range. And some people still haven't really seen Keanu Reeves act. But if you want to see even a good performance from him, check out the movie The Gift, where he plays a bigot and a racist. I'm telling you, I was like, you know, floored. He does have range. People are just not giving them the stuff to show their range.
Yeah.
So it's a possibility that Ashton Kutcher has some serious range as an actor. He may pull this off, and it may be like his first Oscar or Academy, I'm hoping. He already has the look down, so good luck, Ashton.
Yeah, you know, he was very much good luck.
Did you know he was a twin?
Ashton is?
Ashton Kutcher is a twin.
Identical?
Identical.
I did not.
Somebody else, I'm all calling. I just read by accident. It's going to be an accident.
Yes.
Like,
wow.
Are you a twin? Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, button your shirt back up.
All right, what have I got? Okay, bear with me. This story, I'm going to try to, I'm going to try to filter it. PopSci, Wonders of the Universe app is your space textbook of the future. I have to tell you about this. This is so flipping cool. So the potential of tablets to transform the way we learn is pretty extraordinary. The first really wow app we saw for the iPad was a reimagining of the periodic table. Wonders of the Universe, a new app from the BBC, HarperCollins, and Professor Brian Cox takes you zooming through our universe from a broad view of at multiple galaxies all the way down to a look at subatomic particles with more than a film's worth of videos.
Ooh, speak geeky to me. Do it.
Yes, this is hot. Wonders was launched a couple of days ago. It costs $6.99 for a limited time. Most of the screen is taken up by a zoomable 3D universe, bright dots of activity on a velvet black velvet black background. There's a navigation bar at the top that takes you to sections that include subatomic, atomic, solar system, stars, Milky Way, galaxies, and universe. I'm sitting here looking at the pictures of this, and this is beautiful. This is a wonderful, wonderful building. I mean, there's a video, and there's everything. It's gorgeous. At the bottom of the screen, a horizontal scrolling bar displays topics relevant to the part of the universe you're in. Freeform zooming and scrolling through the universe is fun, but the app sort of keeps you on a path to learn about specific topics in a specific order. This could be the future of our science classes, our history classes. Can you imagine this? Kids with an app like this on an iPad teaching them each chapter?
Well, see, this is what Mr. Jobs actually envisioned when he invented it. So I'm all for it. I wish classes would. You know, Apple just needs to go. Well, I don't know how this would go over. Somebody, there'd be a fight, I'm pretty sure. But Apple really needs to step over to the schools and say, hey, look, we're going to go ahead and give you some iPads and a few apps. And the schools need to let the kids check them out, take them home, just like textbooks. Tell your parents if you lose it, it gets cracked, damaged, pay for it. Some pieces in it, and that's it. Lock it off so they can't get to anything else on the App Store. And let them, there's so much money on paper. There would have up-to-date textbooks. Imagine if you could actually push the information to them as it was happening, you know, historical things, right then, instead of having to constantly update textbooks or, you know, teachers having to amend their curriculum. And the last thing is, you teachers, you can learn how to use the internet.
yes, you do. And this is so awesome. This is
I'm talking to one of my best friends. I'm talking to you, girl, don't know how to use Twitter and Facebook. Stop it.
Oh, no. If you're a teacher and you don't know, oh, my God.
There's quite a few of them. Scary, scary thought. Okay.
Okay.
We're moving along?
Sure. Move along.
I got so much stuff. I'm overwhelmed. Which one should I tell you about next?
What do you think, Ginger?
I don't know.
Well, I will tell you this. Orbis.
Oh, about Orbis.
yes,
last week. Well, there's some more rumors floating around that's saying that Sony will try to launch the Orbis before Microsoft launches their new console. Sony did launch the PS3 a full year after Microsoft introduced the 360, and for the next generation, things were quite different. Now, despite the fact that Sony has previously said it will probably be the last to announce a new console, a source has indicated at VG247 that Sony is confident that it will launch the next PlayStation, that being Orbis, before Microsoft brings the next Xbox to the market. I'm going to continue to call it Orbis just that way until they change that freaking name. Mm-hmm. I hate it. The report notes that both Sony and Microsoft are aiming for around Christmas of next year as a launch date for their respective systems, but they believe Sony will get the jump this time. Sony are completely in the belief that they have the jump on Microsoft this time. The sources are saying, and they said you should be watching the time of next year's E3 keynotes and who's going to go first. So top-line publishers already know about it, another source has said. Developers working with publishers like Ubisoft, for example, already know what's going on. They're already working on it. According to GI.biz, another source noted that more information is going to be issued about the PS4 to developers under NDA in May. Ooh, we're not under NDA. News all closely follows last week's new set of rumors about the PlayStation Orbis names and its specs and the fact that they are planning on not allowing any used games to play on it. I tell y'all what, launching before or after Microsoft, before or after the Wii U, you better figure out a way to let those used games play or it's going to tank just like the PS3 did at the beginning. Get over it. Let us play it.
Mm-hmm. let us play. Nom, nom, nom.
No. I'm mad about cake. That's all right. You see what
I said?
Those brownies, right?
I saw about those brownies. No, I love me some brownies.
Chocolate, sick, delicious brownies.
Girl, I was all sorts of productive this weekend. I made a shirt, or at least I decorated a shirt. I decorated my backpack, which I sent you the picture of. I made a necklace. Oh, yes. I was all sorts of stuff. I mopped the ceilings. I made cake. Oh,
something's wrong with the ginger.
I know. It was totally weird because then somebody was cooking yesterday and they were making tuna and I was like, oh, that sounds good. I don't like tuna. All right. So anyways.
I'm worried about you. I really am.
I know.
Let me just say I had the same issues I had the past weekend with the Call of Duty. Why you no have Call of Duty, Redbox? They actually tweeted me back and said, which one are you looking for?
Wow.
You people in Houston are serious with the Call of Duty. I cannot understand every single copy out. Every single copy, really? Y'all can't let the Game of Matrix have one? Just one? For one night?
She just wants it for one night.
Just one night. I don't think that's it.
Ah, where's Snow when I need her?
And I see Joe Hill is saying, he said exactly what I believe. He says, looks like Nintendo's going to come out on top again because you can't play used games on your Xbox or PS4. That, and like I said on Thursday night, was a stupid decision on both their parts. Parents who have more than one child and are not millionaires, didn't win that Mega Millions over the weekend, cannot afford to have to buy brand new games every single time and throw away the old game. And, oh, doesn't really matter if they do because they can't use the old, you know, they either have to get rid of the old console or get a new one or whatever have you. It's just a mess, and it's not a smart idea, Xbox and Sony. It's just
No, it's not. Not at all. All right. I'm going to lose my voice.
Don't do it.
Seriously. Anyways, of an interesting story, 35-year-old inventor celebrates his first app launch with Dabble, now available on the App Store.
How old is he?
85.
Wow.
yes, people. This tells you gaming is not just for kids. Did an award-winning board game available for free and special promotion. Word games are loved by many people, which is why any LLC is offering its hottest new Apple iPhone and Apple iPad game, Dabble, the fast-thinking word game, free of charge for a limited time only in collaboration with popular games and app portal Daily App Dream. Seriously, if you're not going over there every day, slap yourself, okay? Dabble is the kind of game that is simple as it is challenging. It rewards players with quick wits, a large vocabulary, and perfect spelling. But you have to be on your toes since the goal of the game is to spell out 5 separate words with just 20 letters as quickly as possible. The trick is that the 5 words must be comprised of a 2-letter, 3-letter, 4-letter, 5-letter, and 6-letter word. Dabble is an invention by George Weiss and was awarded the 2011 Word Game of the Year by Creative Child magazine. This is awesome. So again, this is for the Apple iPod Touch and the iPhone. It's free right now over at Daily App Dream. So go check this out.
You know, I also saw something interesting over the weekend on TV. This is not my next story, but I thought I'd throw it in here. Anybody catch the new Samsung TV that has a Kinect type of thing?
Didn't.
That I wonder how Microsoft is feeling about that this morning. I saw the commercial for it. I believe it's a Samsung TV or one of those ones with an S. I was kind of half asleep. Freaking bourbon. But, you wave your hand in front of it to change a channel to get to, you know, different things on the TV. And I think you can talk to it, if I'm not mistaken, much like you do your Kinect. You know, so, what's that going to mean for a Kinect? I wonder if Microsoft actually licensed them to use the technology. I wonder if it's going to be a fight coming. I think it's going to be more of a fight.
Oh, I
can't wait.
Fight. Oh, I hope it's a fight.
Let's see, get the olive oil.
Yes.
All right. So, anyway, let me move on to my actual story.
What you got? What you got?
I have to move away from my head away from the mic, from the headset, because Ginger is going to go all in the high register when I read this one.
Oh?
What
you got?
Rovio is planning to launch an Angry Birds cartoon series.
No. No. People, stop. Right? Just enough. No more Angry Birds anything. What is wrong with you? Why?
And the tagline for it is one small fling for bird, one quantum leap for bird kind. Rovio, that's from Angry Birds Space. But anyway, Rovio is betting that it'll be a long time before Angry Birds runs out of steam. So this fall, the Finnish company will launch a cartoon series for fans of Angry Birds. Wow. The company is one of the hottest brands of the mobile era thanks to the popular...
Who is fans of Angry Birds?
Angry Birds.
People!
Ginger, you got to play at least once. Why don't you go to Google Play and try the space one? It's free. Come on now. Rovio launched a new version of Angry Birds Space a couple of weeks ago and got more than 10 million downloads in the first 3 days. Its cartoon series for TV would be a natural extension of the animated style of the games. Nick Dora, who's the head of the animation at Rovio, said at the MIP TV conference in Cannes, France. Is it Cannes or Cannes? I think it's Cannes. That a new animated series will debut this fall as a weekly show. The company has created already 52 episodes that last about 3 minutes each. An Angry Birds movie is also in the works but won't be released for a couple of years. Didn't they just do that with Rio?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, it's just Angry Birds Rio. Dora also confirmed that an Angry Birds movie is in the works, but it won't be released for a couple of years. You already said that. Rovio bought the animation house Combo last June to handle the animation production in-house as part of a strategy to expand from a game company to an entertainment company based on one IP.
Oh, wow.
Rovio, you know what? Let me just talk to you in the old school language. You guys are a bunch of pimps over there. I guess if it's working, just work and do it. That's all I can say. I'm bow in and out. Joe Hill is saying, he says he saw the TV is awesome, but Microsoft is going to put a lawsuit down. They are. I have no doubt that they will. If it catches on, they are definitely going to go after those people. If they haven't already issued a cease and desist, stop showing that commercial. I wish when they would do that, when they'd send out a cease and desist order, like for something like that it would show over the commercial. You know, they'd still play the commercial because they pay for the ad space. It'd be like, cease and desist, this bitch should not be sold. So I could laugh. It'll be funny. Anyway, I'm sorry. I had to laugh.
No, it's fine. It's fine. All right, I'm going to try not to lose my voice while I read here. I'm pulling another story from PopSci.com. I love this website. What can a video game tell us about how economies work? Kind of cool. On October 3rd, 2008, President George W. Bush signed the Troubled Asset Relief Program bill into law, delivering $450 billion to failing banks on the premise that it would prevent their collapse and stimulate a faltering economy. Like millions of Americans, Dimitri Williams, an associate professor of communications at the University of Southern California, found TARP troubling. Not because the bill provided too much, or as many economists argued, too little, but because it was unscientific. He said, we did $500 billion experiment with the economy and had no control group, he says. Setting up a test bed for a program as difficult, but it wasn't impossible. Williams had just found a Petri dish in video games. Williams, a sociologist who had always based his research on data gathered by clipboard-wielding graduate students, but when people know they're being watched, they change their answers with startling regularity, so much so that the behavior has a name, the Hawthorne effect. 4 years ago, just before the economy imploded, Williams and his colleagues found a way to counteract the Hawthorne effect. After asking permission from the game's manufacturer, Williams was able to access 4.5 terabytes of player data for massively multiplayer online game EverQuest 2. The data set was enormous. It chronicled every action, exchange, and decision made by nearly 5 million players. By comparison, the General Social Survey, the benchmark for sociological research in the U.S., consists of some 800 questions answered by 5,000 people. The game data also drew on behavior that was, at least from the perspective of players, unobserved. Now Williams had to determine which behaviors were true in both real world and in games, a process called mapping. He and a team of computer scientists looked at 5 months of economic data from EverQuest 2, in which players buy and sell roughly 2 million items every month, a real economy at work. Williams then set about studying the data from two different servers, where two groups of people, a test group and a control, played the same game with the same conditions. The control group was filled with people who had already been playing EverQuest 2, and the test group was made up entirely of new players. It would be like taking a copy of the U.S. and removing the people and then seeing if you'd get the same country with the same behavior when you repopulate it. Players' activities in EverQuest 2 mapped theories of money that had never before been tested on such a large scale. Unsurprising though it may seem, the fact was that as more gold coins were added, prices in the game rose, proved that the communities of EverQuest 2 could be a stand-in for the American economy. And they still test those billion-dollar bailouts before any real money changes hands.
Very
Come on, this is so cool. To be able to use money to possibly solve the world economy issues?
Well, it's very interesting. I have always thought they could do something like that, but to see it done,
I think it's awesome. I would like to see them continue this research and see where it goes.
Well, aren't they still continuing it?
I believe so, yes. I guess more of what I'm saying is I would like to have an update in another 6 months and then in another year and see whether or not gaming trends for gaming economies hold true to real-life trends for economies.
Well, they could have done the same thing with Second Life. It actually has real money.
God, yeah.
But you know what? You know what? You know what? Actually, they couldn't, because what they did was they were watching to see if all the prices rose. Some people in Second Life will not raise or lower their prices for that matter because quality or how lucky they were didn't change.
It's true.
We have to talk about some stuff I've seen over the weekend when I popped in stores. Why do some of you pick up a Photoshop and think you know, I'm going to be quiet. Moving along. Just a shame. Okay.
Yes.
Well, good news for the people that still have a job over in the UK with game.
Yes.
They have a new owner.
Ooh.
Yay! And this owner has confirmed that there will be no more store closures as it provides capital to the business to trade on a normalized basis. Baker Acquisitions, advised by OpCapita, has bought all of the UK assets of game and will keep 333 stores open, and this will safeguard almost 3,200 jobs. It also hopes to re-employ a small number of the head office staff. Fantastic! Henry Jackson, who's the MD of OpCapita, said, we strongly believe there is a place on High Street for a video gaming specialist, and game is the leading brand in a $2.8 billion market in the UK. He says, we've assembled a long team of experienced industry operators to implement the program of operational change that is needed. There is a huge amount to do, but we look forward to the challenge of restoring game's fortunes in partnership with its employees and its suppliers. Getting suppliers on board with the new business will be top priority after publishers such as EA, Activision, Ubisoft, and others begin pulling games from the shelves at the start of the year. Saddled with debt, the publisher spiraled into administration last week, sacking, and that's firing for you Americans, 2,100 staff and closing 277 stores. Ouch. They said, we are delighted to be able to secure the business sale and provide some much-needed stability for our customers, suppliers, and employees alike in these uncertain times, added Mike Gervais, who's the administrator of PwC. He said the support of these stakeholders has been crucial over the last week, and I would like to thank them for their support throughout this difficult period. This means that the Game brand will not be another one of the retail names disappearing from High Street in the current difficult climate. Fantastic. I am so happy to hear that.
Totally.
Thank them for coming in and saving the day. You get some applause for that. Hey, I'm a little worried. We got some UK people over there that love us. Speaking of which, the girl that's dropping by Pixinista tomorrow night, whose name is Nivea Stardust, who is a famed fashion designer in the world of IMUV and Second Life, is from the UK. So, guys, if you'd like to listen to the UK girls talk, you might want to be available tomorrow night just to listen to her talk. I don't know what she's going to say anyway. I'm just like, just talk, girl. We love the accent.
Wow. Yeah, I cannot wait to see the accent. I can't wait to see the accent. I love me some accents. So rar. Yeah, totally.
Yes. We also figured out we have the same skin and shape that we got from LAC. She's like, hey, we look alike. I was like, damn, not a lot of shape. I can't be looking like other people. What?
You got to make some shapes. Got to make shapes.
I don't make shapes. Just buy them. I don't I do baby shoes. That's what I do.
That's true. I have to talk to you about something later. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't forget what it is. Write it down, Ginger.
I won't, actually. Silicon Knights confused about holdup on Canadian grant money. Earlier this week, it was revealed that Silicon Knights had not received grant money from the Canadian government that was announced on July 14th, 2011. In a he-said-she-said moment, SK frontman Dennis Dyack tells Games Industry that he doesn't that he just doesn't understand why the Canadian government is holding out on the grant money. The Canadian government attempts to explain the holdup, which Dyack then denies. First, Bridget Marleau, responding to questions about the funding, tells Games Industry International the government's side of the story. Ontario has a long-standing track record of partnering with the province's digital media industry, but we also have an important responsibility to ensure accountability with taxpayers, taxpayers' dollars. We announced a conditional funding agreement with Silicon Knights on July 14th of 2011. Because the company has not yet met the conditions of the agreement, no funding has been provided. Over the past 5 years, Ontario has successfully partnered with businesses to create thousands of new jobs, leveraging millions of dollars of investment and improving the competitiveness of its economy. This includes Ubisoft, which has produced blockbuster titles such as Assassin's Creed Brotherhood and No More Heroes 2, Desperate Struggle. When presented with a government response to questions about the funding, Dyack said that he was still confused on the holdup. Silicon Knights has met all the conditions for the grant and is confused by this response. We are continuing to look at the situation. Perhaps this is simply a case of miscommunication, but we will never know because the conditions that both parties speak of are sealed under a confidentiality agreement. Silicon Knights should probably make the agreement and sign the government to see exactly what it is they have not done to get funding. Amen. And you know what? They may want their money, and I understand they want it, and they're upset that they've not gotten it, but you made an agreement with the government, and if you're not following the stipulations, then it's your own fault that you've not gotten the money. Do whatever it was you agreed to.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because Canada is one of those growing, at least BC is one of those growing places for the gaming community right now, so...
Mm-hmm.
You can't even say that, you know, it's the government just not wanting to help. Because, no, they've been helping. There's been a whole brain drain from Europe going over there, so.
That's right. And we would like to bring the some of that back down this way.
Yes, yes. Come to Austin. Austin.
I need them to come to Houston. Forget Austin.
Right,
I love you,
Houston.
Austin, but Austin has too many hills.
All right, come to Houston. It's green. It's pretty. It's Texas. It's beautiful. You'll love it.
And you're more likely to work from home. That's why they started the whole telecommute.org project here. So you can stay at home even when it's raining and work. Just saying. I'm just saying, you cannot be cute in Austin with heels on because all the hills, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
My poor blistered feet. Anyway. So apparently people that work in the game industry are slightly happier than
most people.
Yes, and game industry workers were laid off less often last year. Gamma Sutra's reporting the game industry was slightly more stable last year as developers experienced fewer layoffs and reported feeling more satisfied with their work, according to Game Developer Magazine's 11th annual Game Developer Salary Survey. Wait a minute, did I get that in the mail? Maybe around here somewhere. Anyway, in the magazine's survey results, revealed exclusively on Gamma Sutra, around 13% of respondents working in the game industry said they were laid off in 2011, down from 14% in 2010 and 2009. And some more people were laid off last year said they found a new job elsewhere in the mainstream games industry following the same year, which is 58%, up from the 52% in 2010. Survey participants said that they made slightly more money as well as the average salary across the entire mainstream games industry in the U.S., which increased to $81,192 last year compared to the $80,817 in 2010. And 66% of survey respondents said that they made more money in 2011 than they did in 2010 compared to 56% from 2010 to 2009. Now, having a little more money and stability made developers feel more optimistic about their careers as well as the industry as a whole. In the self-reportage area of the survey, where developers can voice their thoughts about working in games, 65% of respondents said they felt satisfied or extremely satisfied with their potential career path in the game industry. That's up from 61% in 2010. More information on the survey is available in the April 2012 issue of Game Developer Magazine. And if you don't get it, if you should grab you a subscription. And Ginger, remind me about a subscription later. I'll talk to you about that. Also, there's also a worldwide paper-based subscription to Game Developer Magazine are currently available at the official magazine website. And there's also a digital issue that's available. I don't know if there's an app. They don't say if there's one. But I get the magazine. I love it. Sometimes we pull a couple of stories from there, from that magazine. But isn't that nice? See, we told you guys that this was a good field to be in.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You know what I find a lot of when I talk to people about people that have jobs elsewhere is a lot of them want to get into the gaming industry and they don't realize how their present job translates to the gaming industry. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to say this person's name because I've been fussing at them for years about the fact that the field that they work in directly translates to the gaming industry if they so wanted to. They could pretty much just walk in and have a job, but they're so afraid to do so. In doing help desk and, you know, knowing a little bit of programming and having all the certifications, I said, you pretty much can just walk in and say, I want this job, and they're going to hand it to you. There's no reason why you shouldn't if you want to do it. And a lot of you out there, even if you think your career doesn't translate, what was it we were talking about last week, the Unreal, they're doing something with the government and medical training and things.
Yes.
If you work in the medical field and you just like, you know, I really would love to get in the gaming industry, you have medical training. They're looking for you because you're going to lend some authenticity to whatever it is they're doing, medical games. I mean, it's all kinds of applications. I talked to some girls last summer standing out in the playground when last year, some high school girls, and was telling them about the games industry, and they were like, oh, yeah, but, you know, boys and stuff play games. Do you make a lot of money doing that? I said, the salary starting at $80,000. I'd be damned. Yeah, you make a lot of money. And in Houston, $81,000 is like you're a millionaire. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. I totally know. It's the same way here.
Yeah. Costing in Texas is low. You could walk up and take some of that money and put down on a house and have a big, beautiful, gorgeous house in one of the nicest.
Literally. For example, I live on the boonies of Texas, 4-bedroom house, 3 acres. It was a little over $32,000. Of course, it was a foreclosure, but
that's another thing. Our foreclosures are super cheap.
Yes. I mean, like I said, 3 acres worth of land, 4-bedroom house, out in the boonies.
What is it? 20 feet here will cost you probably somewhere around $125,000 or so, which is cheap because in the rest of the country, that's $300,000, that's $400,000.
Yes, I know. I hear about these people in New York paying like $1 million for a flat. And I'm like, really?
You need to come on down to Texas. We got flats here, too. We got some of everything.
Yeah, and you're going to pay... you're going to pay literally a fraction
of what you pay.
Yeah.
And you'll have all your fine dining and your nightlife and whatever it is that you like to do or if you like to be far out.
Yes, we've got Dallas, we've got Austin, we've got, oh crap, what is the one of the beaches? Galveston.
Well, we don't want to live in Galveston.
No. I don't
hate Galveston, but when the floods come, that's panic time.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
That's like, run! Okay, anyway.
Well, you know, we've got a little bit of everything. You just got to know where to look for it.
Hello, good morning to Matt Elfrick.
And Tank West. Good morning, everybody. Followed us in the insanity.
Yes. Good morning, everybody.
Okay.
All right. Ooh, it'd be my turn. Something just popped up, and I'm not quite for sure. All right, here we go. More next-gen Xbox rumors.
Ew.
Yeah. Another day, another rumor about the next Xbox console from Microsoft, and this one is a whopper, according to a new rumor by VG247. Did we already do this? This sounds familiar. The next Xbox console system will use always-on DRM, and its format will be Blu-ray disc-based.
No, we did not talk about that. Tell them, because I told them about the place, the Orbis. But
yes.
We didn't know about the Xbox. Go ahead.
Previous rumors about the system were that it would not contain a disc drive at all. What's interesting about the Blu-ray disc rumor is how unlikely a possibility it is. After all, Sony owns the Blu-ray format, and when Microsoft had the chance to adopt it last time, the company supported the HD disc format instead. Some other details about this latest rumor is a Christmas 2013 release. The machine will have two GPUs. One source tells the publication it's like two PCs taped together. They're described as the equivalent to AMD's 7000 series GPUs, but not Crossfire or SLI. There will be four or six cores to the Xbox 720 CPU, one reserved for Kinect and one for the OS. The next generation of Kinect will be built into the device as standard. That doesn't really surprise me. These latest rumors come from third-party developers, according to VG247. That's interesting. All right, the Kinect thing doesn't really surprise me. I figured that'll be one big bundle from now on. Especially with the Wii and the Wii U. Yeah, that you've got to have that to be competitive. So it's no longer going to be just an add-on, you know?
Well, you know, they were doing the add-on with the Wi-Fi, so I'm going to say it needs to be Wi-Fi out of the box like the Wii always is.
Yeah, and I bet it's going to be.
It better be. I'm tired of having to buy plugs and stuff.
No kidding. I paid $100 for that stupid Wi-Fi for my Xbox. I'm mad.
I got mine on sale.
Nice.
It was still $50. That's the cost of a game. That was money wasted.
It was one of those. It was midnight. I went down to Walmart. I was bored and shopping, and I grabbed it.
Walmart is the root of all evil when it comes to gaming.
There's nobody else open up at midnight.
It's not just that. But I don't know about Walmart, but the ones that tend to put games right near the front door when you're coming in and when you're leaving. So the first thing I see when I come in is, ooh, new Mass Effect, and I'm like, you know, hand shaking. Oh, don't look at it. Don't look at the Mass Effect.
No. They put the signs for them, but no, I've never seen them girl front.
They put them near the door, and they have the sensor tags on them, so you can't just grab one and run out. But they're right next to the door when I first walk in, and when I'm leaving, there's a big old sign on the door, and it's blocking the other door, you know, where it has double doors that open. The other side that you're supposed to be able to walk through, it has a giant display for Mass Effect, and I'm like, hand shaking. Don't look. Don't go back. Don't go back in the self-checkout line and buy it. Don't do it, Gordon. You know, this old lady at the door like, what's wrong, sweetheart? Nothing. Just mark my damn receipt so I can go. Just put the... I don't want to buy it. I can't do it. All right. So I bet you guys didn't know this because I didn't. Researchers at Drexel University have told our frenemies over at Kotaku that used 360s can be hacked with common tools to get your personal information that was stored on the hard drive, including your old credit card numbers.
Yeah.
Drexel researchers Ashley Podrasky, I'm sorry, Ashley, and Cindy Casey, alongside Dakota State University's Pat Egbertson, purchased a refurbished Xbox 360 last year and cracked it open with a basic modding tool that they found online. And they said, while Microsoft does a great job of protecting their proprietary information, they don't do a great job of protecting the user's data. Yeah. Podrasky said she thinks that Microsoft has a long-standing pattern of this. When you go and reformat your computer, like a Windows system, it tells you that all of your data will be erased. And, of course, we all know that's not true. With the right tools, you can mine it and get it back. So when Microsoft tells you that you're resetting something, it's not all that accurate. For users concerned about completely clearing their personal information, Podrasky recommends unhooking the hard drive from your 360, hooking it up to a PC, and then using a third-party program to cleanly wipe the data. I want to say something like PC Tools should do the job because it has a format and a deep format or something like that. I'm not correct. You know, I'll have to open it up to look because I have it running on my PC. Speed Up My PC has a tool. And
and registry editor, I believe it is, a registry mechanic. Otherwise, some seasoned hackers will have no problem finding the same information given with the same tools. A lot of them already know how to do this, she said. Anyone can freely download a lot of this software, essentially pick up a discarded game console and have someone's identity. That's probably how they might know. I wonder if she has a refurb or she got a new Xbox. Microsoft's security except. Xbox's security general manager, Jim Alcove, told Joystick that the company was looking into the issue. He says, we're still conducting a thorough investigation into the researchers' claims, and we have requested information that will allow us to investigate the console in question and have still not received the information needed to replicate the researchers' claim, Alcove said in his statement. Xbox is not designed for credit card data locally on the console, and as such seems unlikely credit card data was recovered by the method described. How additionally, when Microsoft refurbishes used consoles, we have a process in place to wipe local hard drives of any other user data. We can assure Xbox owners we take the privacy and security of their personal data seriously. And if that was the case, you would not have to investigate, now would you? And we all know that while the information may not be stored on the Xbox, your login information is. And if you forgot to change your password when you got your new Xbox, like many of us do, somebody could log in as you and get some of your information. It's that easy. Ginger?
I guess. Awesome. Right.
That's not awesome.
Well, no, it's not. Because, I mean, it is a pain in the behind
you know,
to have to take out.
Ginger was reading a story. That's why I'm messing with her.
I was. I totally was. I shouldn't have, but.
As long as you didn't scroll, it's good.
No, I wasn't scrolling. I was daydreaming. Xbox to collaborate with Obsidian on Wasteland 2 if it reaches $2.1 million in funding.
Ooh, nice.
Yes, InXile announced that it would work with Obsidian Entertainment to design Wasteland 2, but only if its Kickstarter funding reaches $2,100,000.
Wow.
The Kickstarter's original goal was $900,000. It is currently inching towards $1.7 million. The collaboration makes sense if you consider where many of the company's founders and employees came from, Interplay and Black Isle Studios. InXile said that Obsidian's Chief Creative Officer Chris Avalon will be working directly with the design team at InXile, and Obsidian will be lending the experience they have in the development of RPG games and tools into InXile. InXile CEO Brian Fargo believes this collaboration will allow him to focus more energy on the game. Wasteland is one of my favorite RPGs of all time, and when Brian asked if I wanted to work on the sequel, I jumped at the chance. I've worked on Fallout 2 and Fallout New Vegas. Getting the chance to work on the spiritual predecessor to the Fallout franchise is an honor. I have a history with the guys at Obsidian that dates back to the days of Interplay's Black Isle Studios, says Brian Fargo. Together, we created some of the greatest RPGs of all time, from Fallout 1 and 2 to titles like Icewind Dale and Planescape Torment. It is great that we now have a chance to reunite on a project like Wasteland 2. Wasteland still has 17 days remaining until the Kickstarter funding ends. InXile also announced a way for fans who live in a country where backing it on Kickstarter is not allowed. InXile also announced a way for fans who live in a country where backing it on Kickstarter is not allowed can donate. Fans can visit the game's official website and make a pledge via PayPal. All right, so the official website, you got a pin? Got it? You ready? Wasteland.inexile-entertainment.com. If you need that again, you can head over to GamePolitics.com this morning and pick that up.
All right. There's a new game out that is scaring the bejesus out of some of you peoples out there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's an underwater horror game called Deep Sea. It was on display at the Game Developers Conference 2012 and their experimental gameplay session, and they're saying that it is terrifying. Absolutely terrifying, because it has you strap on a mask, which kind of looks like a diving mask, executioner's mask.
No. Nothing goes over the ginger's face.
See, that's how they get you. It's supposed to be reasonable. It does look like one of those gas masks from, from the days of yore. Also, headset. Now, the purpose of the mask is supposed to be to scare you. The player cannot see. Your breathing is limited, and you can only hear the cries of an angry beast at the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, you know what? I have a fear of being under the water. I will never go scuba diving. Mm-mm, y'all don't even try it. Deep Sea, is the name of the game, is the work of one Mr. Robert Arnold, who's an Austin-based developer. Yay! And he spoke with Gemma Sutra. He's the sound designer on Alexander Bruce's Antechamber. If you've played that game, I think Blaster was trying to get me to play that one. He says when he was asked, how scary is Deep Sea? He says people seem really freaked out by it. At E3 2011, he said he remembers seeing someone come out of it whose hands were shaking, and he didn't want to talk because he was kind of freaked out about it. He said people don't always get freaked out, but it does have it doesn't have 100% success rate. But when they do get freaked out, it really works. When it works, it really works. What is the thing that's so scary about it? It's supposed to induce feelings of claustrophobia. It's not the fear of drowning. He says it's not in the game. He says it's pretty much your imagination. He has the fear. And I love the science that he actually puts behind why this is so scary to people. He says when someone comes out of deep sea still feeling the raw physical sensation of being inside and showing the symptoms that come with fear, like shaking hands, sweating, and a stumbling voice, that means the experiment was a success. Deep sea works from negative emotions. Most people have a really intense negative experience. It's not a lasting negative experience. He says, if it were, I wouldn't feel so good about it. He says, but you have to... Never scroll. He says, if you think about it in terms of primordial man, he says if that man sees the grass rustle and assumes it's a snake and he's afraid of it, that person is going to survive to reproduce. We wouldn't be alive if we weren't overly afraid of things, if we didn't let our imagination take control of us. Of course, fear isn't so relative anymore now that we have big houses to protect us. But isn't it nice how you put all that? I love that you said that. Anyway, I'm all excited. I love
when I can hear it.
I love when our developers come up with something that's just completely different. I'll play it. I like being scared. Nothing much scares me. But so
nothing goes over my face.
I like closed and small spaces. But I was a preemie and I was in an incubator for 3 months, is what the doctor said. So I will always like small closed spaces. So I don't get claustrophobic.
Things do not go over the ginger's face.
But I am not sure where he's going to be showing this off again. I don't know if he's going to be at E3 this year, but I think it's an excellent game. I'm hoping that they go ahead and put it out. They do have a game out called Synapse that is on the Indiecade, if you want to give that one a go. But that one isn't so much scary as it deals with your imagination and creative flow. But I am hoping we get a chance to see this somewhere. Because I love the mask. Didn't you put it on?
No. No.
Okay, I'll do it. I'm not scared.
Yeah, you can do it. Mask is not going on the different face.
Damn. I see you and Snow going, I'm not going to do it. I'll do it.
You can do it. There's nothing going over the ginger's face.
walk.com/deepsea. I'll probably share the link up on Twitter so you can go take a look at it, because it really is kind of scary looking from the outside. But I ain't scared. I want to do it. I want to try it. They've been all over the place. They've been looks like they've been to Germany. They were in Austin. They were at E3 2011. So they've been showing this off and getting a lot of attention. But they're calling it the sensory deprivation video game. So you don't see or hear anything but the noises. Come on, Ginger.
No. No. All right, Able Gamers front and center at PAX East.
Yay! Oh, I'm so excited for them. I talked to Steven last week, by the way, and I called him Spoon. I said, Spoon!
Steven Spoon, I love you, Spoon. For the first time, the Able Gamers Foundation will have a booth at a public gaming event. The organization dedicated to supporting technology and games that offer accessibility to the disabled will be at the Penny Arcade Expo East, PAX East 2012. The nonprofit will have a booth on the main floor at the expo, North Hallway, displaying some of the best technologies available to those with disabilities who want to get into gaming. Able Gamers will also host a panel called Why Socially Enabled Games Are Important to Gamers with Disabilities on Friday, April 6th at 6 p.m. in the CAT Theater with a few surprise panelists from one of this year's hottest games with the most controversial endings. Oh, my God. We're at
absolutely thrilled to be able to bring very unique ways to play games to a large audience, says Able Gamers Editor-in-Chief Steve Spoon. With more than 33 million disabled gamers in America alone, almost everyone knows someone with a disability who enjoys some form of gaming. It's our hope that a demonstration like this will let people know it's possible for their friends and loved ones to continue gaming regardless of life on disability or trauma from war. Able Gamers has done what we call the Accessibility Arcade in multiple cities around the country for a number of years, as Mark Bartlett, president and co-founder of the Able Gamers Foundation. But this will be our largest demonstration yet. We will have four different stations displaying new and innovative ways to play today's hottest games with assistive technology, including our own Adroit instead of a traditional controller. Yay! All right, so if you want to check this out, Able Gamers is a wonderful 501c3 public charity, and you can check them out over at ablegamers.org. Steven, I love you. I'm so sorry.
Spoon!
Steven Spawn, right?
Steven Spawn. That's a cool name, as we told him. Okay, so I know you guys were thinking this morning, what happened to our charts? I didn't forget about you.
Oh, I think she did.
No, I didn't. I got them open.
I think she totally did.
Mm-mm, I did not forget. So I'm going to tell you what everyone was playing. Wow, interesting games being played over the weekend. Number 10, SSX. Number 9, Mario and Sonic London 2012 Olympic Games. Number 8, Battlefield 3, which was also absent from the red box. Number 7, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, absent from the red box.
Y'all are in trouble. Y'all need a quiz taken before his games, before she cuts somebody.
Number 6, Naruto Shippuden Ninja Storm Generations. Number 5, FIFA 12. Number 4, Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City, also absent from the red box. Number 3, Tiger Woods PGA Tour. Number 2, Mass Effect 3, again, absent from the red box. And number 1, FIFA Street. What is with the FIFA Street? I got to pick this up. Anybody out there playing FIFA want to explain to me what is the draw? Because you people are loving you some FIFA.
I have no idea, but that's kind of crazy.
I want to play.
I don't know. I don't want to play FIFA at all. That's just not my thing.
I do. I got another story.
Oh, you do? Because I got another one either way.
It's short.
Okay, go.
Those of you who are thinking of starting up your new game company and looking for money will be happy to know that President Obama is planning on signing a pro-crowdfunding Jobs Act into law this coming Thursday. According to VentureBeat, it's a piece of legislation designed to make crowdfunding a legal option for startups. It will be passed into law again on this Thursday. It's going to be called the Jumpstart Our Business Startups, a.k.a. Jobs Act, and has already successfully made its way through the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives with some modifications, and will allow startups raising $1 million or less to let regular Joes and Janes, that is RID, non-accredited investors, purchase a limited amount of equity in their nascent businesses via approved portals. The legislation also eliminates the 500 shareholder rule, meaning that startups can wait longer before needing to publicly report financial data to the SEC and hold off on forced public offerings. Nice, because that's a worry for us here. On Thursday, the president will sign the Jobs Act. Press Deputy Secretary Josh Earnest said in a press gaggle on Friday. News of the Jobs Act imminent approval started spreading on Twitter Saturday afternoon when AOL co-founder Revolution CEO and Jobs Act proponent Steve Case tweeted the revelation. The entrepreneur finally initiated through the Senate with a 73-26 passing vote, and the revised law passed in the House with a 380-41 overwhelming majority. The legislation, popular with Democratic and Republican political parties alike, was already known to be supported by the White House and President Obama. The Jobs Act will help revitalize an IPO market that has suffered in recent years under the weight of market volatility and one-size-fits-all regulation. Highland Capital General Partner and National Venture Capital Association Chair Paul Mader said in a previous statement, wow, that was quick. The passage of this legislation sends a strong and welcome signal to our most promising companies as the U.S. capital market system is open for business. Yay. We got to go.
We do.
Wow. So we see you guys bright and early tomorrow. And remember, tomorrow night we're doing Pixinista. Again, if you like English girls, guys, drop on by. And girls, definitely drop on by. This girl makes some beautiful stuff. Oh, amazing.
Yes, yes.
Remember, you know, find us GameAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAndAnd
Later, boys and girls.